You're listening to the weekly teaching podcast of Beaverton Christian Church in Beaverton, Oregon. We hope that what you hear today inspires you to laugh, question, think, and grow. If you'd like to connect with us even further, hit us up online at beaverton.cc or shoot us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy this week's episode.
My name is Grant. If I don't know you, I'm one of the pastors here, and it really is my privilege to continue on in this series. Maybe you were watching that bumper video just now, and it just resonated with you. You were like, yeah, like I've been there. I felt that moment where we're looking around going, wait, I thought this was going to happen. Like we had this promotion coming or this big life event, it was supposed to come and now I'm not going to graduate or I didn't get the raise or how do we make the decision? How do we move forward? I think there's a moment where we've all felt that text conversation there. This morning we're going to look at Psalm chapter 25 and what does it look like to seek wisdom from God? Because it's moments like that where you're going, hey, we're just going to pray and God, we need you to speak into our lives and into a moment that David is going to help us out with. And the reason we're doing this and the reason we've called it Songs in the Key of Life is because music has the ability to move us. Music has that way of putting into words and into rhythm the feelings that we have. And you can listen to music and all of a sudden your attitude can shift because the power behind it is just that amazing. There's been studies that have been done that show that music can help your blood pressure to rise and to fall. There's music that can cause your heart to start beating faster or to slow down and to help you to be calm and relaxed. There's music that if you wrestle and struggle with anxiety, there's certain playlists that you can listen to that are supposed to help calm your anxiety down. I even read one study that said that music is supposed to help with your digestion. I don't know how that works, but if there's a playlist that I can listen to and somehow miraculously lose weight, sign me up. Like, I want to figure that one out. But apparently music is just powerful. Maybe for you, there's a song or two that every single time that song comes on, it just transports you back in time to a specific time and place. I know for me, there's two songs that always take me somewhere. Both of them came during my senior year of high school. I don't know what it is about your senior year in high school that just embeds memories in you. But one of them, it's Eminem's Lose Yourself. I know I'm a white dude, but it's one of those songs that comes in when he starts rapping about mom's spaghetti and vomit on your sweater already and that you got to lose yourself in the music, the moment you want it. That's the whitest you've ever heard that song. But that song takes me back because it came out my senior year in high school and it was the song that we played in the locker room every single time before we took the football field. And so not only do I remember the emotions of that, we had a really successful season. I can almost feel the shoulder pads back on me and the helmet in my hand and the cleats laced up and the tape around my ankles when that song comes on. And the other one that comes to mind is Coldplay's The Scientist. Maybe you remember that one. It's got this really moving music video where there's, spoiler alert, he's walking backwards the entire time. And the song came out in like 2003, so sorry if this is a spoiler, but he's moving backwards and there's a car wreck and he's just lamenting about this time in life. And the reason that one plays just in my mind and as a memory is because that came out right about the same time that my girlfriend broke up with me. That is not funny. Why would you laugh? Why? How come my pain is your humor? I don't understand this. But it was one of the deepest heartbreaks that I'd ever felt. I mean, I just wept in the arms of a friend and I went home and that song was on the radio and I was like, there's got to be a music video. And I watched it. And to this day, if that song comes on, my mind goes back to those emotions, back to the girl that broke my heart. And I pray for her because she missed out. I'm just saying, right? Like, I just go back. Somebody just yelled, woo. This is probably my wife. Right? This music, it just can move you in this way, right? It's just amazing that it can do. And the Psalms is an entire book of music. It's lyrics that were written, many of them by a guy named David, who's a warrior poet. And he has different genres. And what he does is he takes his emotions and he goes before God and he says, hey, I want to lay this out. And many of them, as you learned last week, are meant to be corporate. Some are meant to be individual, but they were all meant to be tools that would remind us of postures that we can take before God. And so as I mentioned, we're going to be in Psalm chapter 25. We're going to look at wisdom this morning. You know, music is important to me not only because of the things that it conjures up and the emotions, but because I grew up in a household where music was very rampant. It was something that we did all the time. My mom was singing. My mom played piano, and so she would constantly play piano in our house, and she played for our church, which meant most Sunday mornings I would wake up, and my mom was tickling the old ivories as she was just getting ready for church that morning because she always helped lead worship. And so it was just a part of my life, but not only that, my mom was a piano teacher. And so after school, we would come home and there would be, you know, other students that were there in the house and she was teaching them piano, which also meant that the kids, like, we had to learn piano and it didn't stick and I didn't stick with it because I didn't practice and my piano teacher knew that I wasn't practicing. And so I couldn't show up and just lie to her. And so eventually I quit, but I can still remember some things. Right? I know that one of the first things you ever learn when you learn to play the piano is right where middle C is. Because middle C is just, and if you can find middle C, you can kind of go from there. It's one of the first things. That if you want to learn how to play the piano, let's just start here. Let's start. Here's middle C. And you're going to just, that's home. And if you get lost and you're not where, sure, just come back. Just come back to middle C. This is where we want to begin. And I believe that David is going to show us in the psalm today that when it comes to seeking wisdom, we have a middle C of life. There's this thing you can continually come back to, and we have to start there every time. But not only that, there's some things that you learn about the piano that have nothing to do with the piano themselves. It's the posture that you need to take while you're playing the piano. Because as a kid, I'm like, why can't I just like slunch over and just like kind of do this thing? And the reason is you want to have better posture when you play because it'll allow you to continue to play longer. It'll allow you to not get tired. It'll allow you to just play longer and longer pieces as you improve. But if you don't have a good posture, then you're not going to enjoy all that the piano has to offer. And so as we look at Psalm 25, we're going to see not only that we have this note, this middle C that we can come back to, but there's a posture that David presents to us that if we would be willing to take that posture, then I really believe that God would give us more wisdom. And who couldn't use a little bit more wisdom? Because there are moments in life, right, when you're trying to decide, should I date this person or should I break up with them? Do I buy a house or do I keep renting? Do I refinance right now or do I not? Should I take the new job? Should I quit a job and go take a career in a new direction? Should we have more children? Should we have a child? Should we not have any children? Like all of these decisions that we have to make, some feel big and some feel small, but we need wisdom. And when you're a kid, that was really easy, right? I just would grab my magic eight ball and I would just look at it and be like, is Jessica gonna say yes? Right? And I would shake it and then my friends, when we'd look at it, it's like, maybe. And I'm like, that doesn't help. I'm gonna shake it some more. Right? It's, you know, it's like, am I gonna pass this test that I didn't study for? Right? And you would shake it. Is my mom gonna ground me? And I'm like, man, I wish sometimes that I had a magic eight ball as an adult. Right? Because I could just pull that thing out and be like, is my wife going to be mad at me in 5 hours? Right? And shake it and be like, oh, no, okay, yeah, yeah. Should I preach longer than 35 minutes this morning? Right? And just shake that. Are cats the spawn of Satan? Right? And shake it and go, and let's be, there's some things you don't need a magic eight ball for. We already know that. But like, it just, there's these things that I go, man, I wish I had that sort of a wisdom thing. And God's going, whoa, there's a way that you can have access to my wisdom. But you need to continue to come to me and ask for it and a posture to take so that I can more easily give it to you. And so let's look at Psalm chapter 25, starting in verse 1. O Lord, I come before you in prayer. My God, I trust in you. So please do not let me be humiliated. Do not let my enemies triumphantly rejoice over me. So here in verse 1 and 2, we don't know what David is fearing. We don't know the decision. We don't know why, what's happening. We know that it's something that he's going, I'm about to be publicly humiliated. Like there's something coming my way, and God, I need your wisdom in my life. I don't just need your will. What I would go do, God, I need your wisdom here. I need some help with this. And so God, don't let my enemies triumph over me. Maybe you feel that way. Maybe there's a decision that is coming at you, and you're going, God, I need your help. Because if I don't make the right decision here, then all of my colleagues are going to say, see, you really can't do that job very well. God, I feel like if this is coming and if I make it wrong, then God, I'm going to be embarrassed before my friends and my family. But notice where he starts. Oh, Lord, I come before you in prayer. My God, I trust in you. That's middle C. that if we are going to seek God's wisdom, if we are going to ask God for his wisdom, it means we trust God with everything. And we have to begin there. It's the thing that you can continually come back to. It's the moment in life that maybe you feel frazzled and you've lost your way. Come back to trusting God. And I know that's so much easier said than done. I know that because there's this moment, right? Maybe you're a follower of Jesus here and you're going, yeah, I can remember back to a time where I realized that I was far from God. And I was going, God, I've rebelled against you. I have no right to be called a child of yours, a son or a daughter. And God looks at you in that moment and he goes, I love you. I love you so much that I sent my son Jesus to die on a cross. He died in your place. The death that was destined for you, I put all of that on Jesus. And Jesus rose from the dead. So would you trust in him for your life? And maybe you've said yes to that in the past, but now life goes on and you're going, but how do I say yes in the everyday moments? Because I've trusted God for eternity, but I'm struggling trusting God with the right now, with the decision that's coming. And God's going, no, trust me with everything. Give everything over to me. You've trusted me with eternity. You can trust me with your kids. There's a moment in verse 12 and 13 where David goes, God, I'm going to trust you with relationships. There's a moment in verse 15 where he says, God, I'm going to trust you with this disaster that I feel like is coming my way. There's a moment in verse 17 where he goes, God, I am stressed out, but I trust you. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord, and it means we trust him with the big and the small. See, I think sometimes I'm willing to come to God and say, God, I'm going to trust you with the big decisions in life, but the everyday, normal, small things of life, I want to own those. Like, I'm going to hold on to those myself. Like, God, I don't really want to trust you. Maybe it's because I'm prideful enough that I don't think I need God's help. Maybe also it's that they're so small, I feel like God doesn't care. I mean, I've read enough of the news. I'm studied enough to know that there's a lot of more dangerous and hard things going on, that other people, that they have lives that are harder than mine. And so I feel like it's trivial to take these small things to God and ask his wisdom. But when I don't take those to God, what I realize is I'm disqualifying myself from God's wisdom. I think we serve a God that loves us enough that he's going, hey, bring me everything. Trust me with everything. And why don't we let God tell us what is small and what is big? Like, there's no harm in bringing even the small things to him and laying them out and saying, God, I need you to speak into this. God, I want to trust you with everything. So would you speak into this small thing? And it's in that moment that God may step in and go, hey, that's a small thing. Would you just trust me with it and move on? Don't think about it anymore. Hey, yeah, it shouldn't be bothering you. And other times he's going to go, no, this is a big deal. And yeah, I'm going to ask you to trust me and to move in this way and to give me everything. You know, through my different jobs that I've had, I've had some bosses that were really good. I've had a few that weren't so good. I'll tell stories about them later. Today's about the good ones, right? If you have a good boss, a boss that you can trust, you know, one of the things that you can always do with a good, trustful boss is take everything to them. Everything that's going on, if you've got a colleague that's driving you crazy, there's some infighting amongst employees, there's a decision that was made, there's a system that's in place that doesn't make sense, a healthy, trusting boss, you can bring that up to them. You can go to them and say, hey, here's what's happening, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but it's bothering me enough to say it. And sometimes that boss will look at you and go, hey, you know what, I'm totally aware of that, and it's a tension that we have to live with, and so would you just help me to fight against that, but we're not going to fix it right now. And other times they'll go, whoa, I had no idea. Thank you so much for bringing that up. And then, okay, how will you help me? How can we figure this out together? And how can we create a healthier, better culture here so that this isn't an issue anymore? That's what healthy bosses do. I've also learned, though, in that time that when things go sideways in an organization, the reason they go sideways is normally because nobody's saying anything. Oh, maybe they're all gossiping about it, but nobody's actually going and talking to the boss about it. And nobody's bringing up the issue to pull it out into the light. They're going, no, that's such a small thing. We shouldn't deal with it. And that's when toxic environments come in and nobody wants to work there, but they have to show up for the paycheck. I go, man, if we know that to be true about human organizations, we have a God that loves us so much more. Why wouldn't we trust him with everything? Go to him and say, God, I really do want your will on this. God, I'm asking for your help on the big and the small. And so for us this morning, I just think it's worth starting there. To just kind of ask the honest question, God, am I trusting you with everything? Are there areas that I'm still trying to white knuckle in and do it myself? Are there areas that I'm not really giving over to you? Would you maybe just come in and go, okay, God, I'm going to come back to Middle Sea. I'm going to trust you with everything. And then as we begin to do that, there's three postures that I believe we can take that we see with David. The first is that he commits to be a learner of God's instruction. He commits his life to learning from God and everything that he can do. Look at verse 4. Verse 4, make me understand. Make me understand your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. He's coming to God and he's going, okay, God, I need your wisdom. So could you make me understand? Because I don't. Would you teach me your paths? It's this idea of taking this posture of being a learner before God. Say, God, I'm going to follow you in the small things, but I'm also going to be a learner of you in the big things. Now, one of the things that I'm not really good at is math. It's just not a strong suit of mine. I know for some people, they're really good. Others of you are like, you're with me right now. You're like, yep, terrible at math. That's not my thing. Now, the reason I'm not good at math is really simple. When I was a kid, my mom was teaching me addition and subtraction. And I would sit on one side of the couch and I'd look over at her and she had the flashcards, right? And she'd hold them up and I'd have to tell her the number and she'd flip it around and tell me if I was right. But what she didn't know is that she's sitting over here on the couch and she'd hold up the flashcard and behind her was a lamp. That meant I could see through the flashcard and see the answer on the back. And so I was just rattling off the answers really good. And my mom thought that she had a genius of a son and who was really, really good at math and just picking it up. What she didn't know is I was cheating. And so I didn't learn math. I'm really good at reading backwards and upside down, however. But I'm terrible at math. I'm terrible because I didn't learn the basics of it as a kid. So then when we got into multiplication and division, I didn't have the base to be able to gain an understanding and knowledge and wisdom of mathematics. Because there were the small things that I had just not disciplined myself to do. It's why in college I studied management and married an accountant. I may not be good at math, but that doesn't make me dumb, okay? And so like I knew, I was like, wait, there's a way around this. And so, but I didn't discipline with the small things, so I couldn't learn the bigger. And I go, wait, if I need to be a commit to being a learner of God's instruction, then I go back and go, oh, wait a minute. Maybe there's some wisdom that God has taught me that I'm not following. Maybe I need to go back and learn some of that. And I'm asking for the big things and God's going, hey, I want to give you those things, but you know there's some smaller things that you already know about that you're not following to begin with. And so I need to be a committed learner and continue to come back to the things that I already know while continuing to grow in wisdom and knowledge of who he is and what he has. If you look in the book of Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 5, verse 12, here's what it says. For though you should in fact be teachers by this time, you need someone to teach you the beginning elements of God's utterances. You have gone back to needing milk, not solid food. For everyone who lives on milk is inexperienced in the message of righteousness because he is an infant. But solid foods is for the mature, whose perceptions are trained by practice to discern both good and evil. See, what the author of Hebrews is doing is going, hey, there are some people out there that are following Jesus that would consider themselves Christians. And although they started out on the things like milk and then they've learned those, then they grew up. And at this point, like you've been following Jesus long enough that you should be able to teach people about the milk. You should be able to do that. And yet you can't because you're not continuing to be a learner. You just quit implementing what you had here or you haven't continued to grow. And so part of understanding the wisdom of God is saying, God, I want to be a constant learner of you. I want to continually grow in understanding so that you can teach me more and more and more. And I told you I wasn't very good at math, but one of the things in my life that I feel like at one point in my life I was really good at is tennis. It's been a long time. I'm not good at it anymore. But there was a season where I just knew if you came on the tennis court and you played against me, I was going to beat you. That wasn't pride. It was true. I just knew it was one of those things. And here's the reason. At one point when I was like maybe in junior high, I had a coach that just called me the backboard. And the reason he called me backboard is because he's like, man, it doesn't matter what anybody sends across the net at you, you're going to get it back over. You are going to run. You're going to dive. You're going to do whatever it takes to get it back over. I had zero finesse. I couldn't topspin, backspin, slice. I didn't do any of it. I knew the basics. And I knew that as long as I could outlast you and force you to make a mistake before I did, that I was going to win the match. That was my whole philosophy. There was no true skill. It was just get the ball back over the net, get the ball back over the net. And then in high school, I had a coach that was like, hey, let me take the foundations of that and let me teach you some of the finesse. Here's how to put backspin on the ball. Here's how to do some top spin. Hey, on your serve, if you'll flick your wrist this way, it's going to become a harder serve where they're not going to be able to return it. And now you don't have to have 4.5 hour long matches, because I had some of those. And they say you can win sooner and you'll have more stamina longer into the tournament. But I had to have the basics to be able to go on to the richer, greater things of tennis. I go, man, I want to be that kind of learner when it comes to God's knowledge. Then I would go, God, I've got the small things that I'm going to discipline in and I'm going to grow in, but then I want to be a continual learner. I'm going to commit to that so that I can grow in knowledge and understanding of who you are. But then as we do that, as we take that posture, the next thing we can do is embrace God's grace. Because let's be honest, there's moments where I am asking for wisdom from God and seeking him, and he does come in and lovingly remind me of the areas where I'm not following him. And that's the moment where I feel like I want to just step back and disqualify myself. Oh God, why would you ever give me this wisdom that I'm asking for over here when I don't follow you in the things over here? And I disqualify myself, and God's going, no, there is more grace. There is always more love. There is always more grace. Your past sins never disqualify you from the wisdom of God. It's why when you leave here, you're going to look out on the wall and you're going to see this giant sign that says you're never too far. It's never too late. Because we really believe in that. And that's what scripture teaches, that God goes, whoa, no, you can't disqualify yourself from my love. In fact, I think in some ways he's like, that's offensive to me. Do you understand that my love and my grace is so big and so vast that you can't disqualify yourself over and over and over again throughout this entire psalm? David comes to God and he's like, God, would you forgive me for my past sins? God, would you forgive me? It doesn't stop him from asking for grace. David continually embraces his grace and gets wisdom. Look at verse 10. For the sake of your reputation, the Lord always proves faithful and reliable to those who follow the demands of his covenant. Verse 11, for the sake of your reputation, O Lord, forgive my sin because it is great. And David comes to him and he's like, God, you are the one that has a reputation. And so God, would you forgive my sin because you are great. It's what you do. David has no qualms coming to God and asking for more wisdom, even though he knows his past sin. If you look at verse 7, I love verse 7. It's so helpful for me. Do not hold against me the sins of my youth or my rebellious acts. Can I get an amen? Amen. I mean, some of you in here right now, you're going like, hey, listen, I get that like my past sins don't disqualify me from the wisdom of God, but like, I know what I used to do. Like, I know the things that I did in my youth, and I remember some of that, and are you sure that God's grace can cover that? David's going, hey, God, don't hold those against me. I've matured a little bit. I'm not doing that anymore. So God, would you treat me for who I am right now? Because you are faithful to me, extend your favor, O Lord. The Lord is both kind and fair. That is why he teaches sinners the right way to live. May he show the humble what is right. May he teach the humble his way. David's going, God, I can't outrun you. The amount of love that you have for me, the amount that you want to pour into me and you want to give to me, God, I want to embrace that kind of grace. And so maybe in my own life, whenever I feel disqualified, I need to remember that those are the lies of the enemy. Those aren't the truths of God. And I go, no, I'm not disqualified. God, I know I haven't been seeking you up to this point, but now I'm going to call on you and I'm going to trust you. And I'm going to trust that you'll speak into this. And we see it with David, but we see it through all of scripture. If you were to just go to Jesus, right, God himself, and if you look at Jesus in the lineage that he came from, begin to do a study on his ancestors and just the things that they did to rebel against God, that if you looked at that, you'd be like, that should disqualify you. That should disqualify you. I mean, you can look back at some of the lineage and you're going to find like people that have sinned against God. You're going to find people that are adulterers, that had affairs. You're going to find somebody that was a murderer and a drunk and a liar and a thief. And that's just David. Who's writing this text? That's just him. And God's going, the guy that did those things, I'm willing to give more wisdom to. The guy that wrote this song so that we can approach God and say, God, I want some more of your grace. But then the third posture that we need to take is genuinely displaying humility. That we would continually go to God and say, God, the reason I need your wisdom is because I can't do it in my own. I've tried to follow the worldly wisdom. I've tried to follow my own wisdom. And God, that isn't getting me anywhere. Oh, it had some temporary success and I feel good and better. But God, I genuinely want to just humble myself before you and say, God, I need you. I trust you. God, I can't do it without you. And just humbling yourself before him. You know, that's where verse 9 had us land. Look back at verse 9. May he show the humble what is right. May he teach the humble his way. The Lord's loyal followers, verse 10 there, the Lord always proves faithful and reliable to those who follow the demands of his covenant. You see, he's going, God, I want to be humble for you. I want to follow what is right. I want to follow in your way. And God, you are the one that proves faithful. Not me, my wisdom, it's not faithful. God, yours is. He comes back to the trust. And then let's go to verse 14. Verse 14 says, the Lord's loyal followers receive his guidance and he reveals his covenant demands to them. He goes, God, listen, I want to humble myself before you. And part of humbly seeking God's wisdom is saying yes before he gives you the answer. But oh, I'm not good at that. You see, what I do is I'm like, God, I need your wisdom. I need your wisdom, but I come in pride and God tells me what to do and I'm not willing to humble myself. And I go, no, that's not your wisdom. God, what I meant was I need you to agree with me on the thing I've already decided. But God, give me your wisdom. And God's like, no, there's a humility. Would you say yes before God has ever given you the answer? God, I'm going to seek your wisdom and I'm going to humbly ask you for it. So whatever the answer is, God, I'm going to trust that. It's why David begins with trust. It's why he, throughout the entire psalm, he keeps coming back to it because he's going, God, I want to humbly submit myself to you and your demands and your ways because I believe that they are wiser than mine. So God, I'm going to trust you with that. And I'm going to say yes. I wonder if sometimes God's going, hey, I would love to give you this thing and to guide you in that way. But hey, there's things that you already know you're supposed to be doing and you're not. And so have the grace in the moment, but then also step forward and humble myself in those areas as well. I wonder if there's times that God is trying to give me wisdom and move in my life, but I don't see it as from God because I don't agree with the decision that was made or how it's playing out or what to do. And I forget that God can move in crazy, weird ways that don't make sense to me. And that God does things in an order that I probably wouldn't have chosen. I can speak to this personally. There was a moment some years ago now where I just felt like God put in me this desire to just help churches. And I was going, I'm not qualified to do that. I don't have the background or everything. I've not worked in the church world. But God, I would just love an opportunity to like coach and to help churches to make better disciples. And so God, I don't know what that looks like, but if you'd ever do that. And it was at a time when my wife and I were living in Texas. And so I was serving at a church there, just kind of longing for and waiting for it. But I kind of, there was some pride there. And I thought, well, of course, like, I mean, if some of my background, I can do this on my own and I can figure this out. And there was this moment where I just came to a spot of humility and I went, God, you've put this desire in me. So God, I'm going to not try to force it. I'm not going to try to make it happen. God, I'm going to just trust you with that. It was shortly after that that God moved us here. This was about 3 years ago from Texas out here to Oregon to be a part of this amazing church that is Beaverton Christian Church. And to work here. And one of the things that I got hired on to do was to launch this amazing deal called Rooted, right? Some of you are going to jump into 10 weeks of Rooted right now. And I'm prayerful for you. And I can't wait to hear how your life is different in 10 weeks than it is right now because of what God's going to do. But as a result of us doing Rooted as a church, what happened was other churches started to call us and go, hey, how did you launch Rooted and what has it done? And because I was over Rooted, all of a sudden I found myself coaching other churches on how to launch Rooted. And I was sitting there going, well, this is really fun. And then I got invited to go speak at a conference to train other churches on how to do Rooted. And I was about to get on the plane and I looked at my wife and I was like, do you catch the irony of what God is doing right now? And she goes, what do you mean? And I was like, when I was in Texas, I wanted to do this. I wanted to coach and to help other churches, but I didn't know how. And I just said, God, I'm going to humbly trust you to do this. So I moved to Oregon where all of a sudden I'm getting to do it. And I'm about to get on a plane to fly to Texas to teach churches how to do Rooted. I'm like, I don't get that. That is not economical. Like that's not the way that I would have done it. And I just think it's those moments where God goes, yeah, because you weren't coming in the right posture. I wanted to give you my wisdom because I love you. But I also want to work on your heart in the process and get you to trust me. To come to this place where you're going to let me do it in my timing and in my ways. So then I have to back up from that and go, okay, God, what are the other areas in my life where I need to trust you more? Where in seeking wisdom, I need to come back and say, God, I've been trying to do it on my own. Maybe it is like that text message dialogue that we read earlier. Where you're going, but you don't understand. Like, I didn't get the job and get the promotion, and the person that compromised their integrity did. And so now what wisdom tells me is I need to compromise my integrity. I need to begin to cut corners and to backstab and to do what they did so that I can get ahead in my career. And God's going, no, that's earthly wisdom. Would you trust me? Would you trust me? I'm going to do it in a different way. Well, yeah, but God, I've got this situation with my family or work or with a spouse that if I tell the truth, like, that's going to hurt me. That's going to come back, and that's not going to be good for me. And so, God, I'm going to just trust my wisdom, and I'm going to continue to lie and to cover up and to hide this because that keeps me safe. And God goes, oh, that's false security. That's actually going to not help you out at all. Come and be truthful and be clean, and there will be more grace for me in that moment. And so don't do that. Don't lie to get ahead. Tell the truth. Oh, that's wisdom that I need to say yes to before I'm asked to do it. And so for you this week, what are those areas in your life where God's saying, hey, I have more wisdom than I would ever want to give you, but would you trust me? Would you come back to middle C and trust me? And trust that the wisdom I give you is the best wisdom. Trust that scenario that seems so big in your life right now, I can handle it. Those things that feel small to you, bring those too, because I love you and I care about you. If it bothers you, it bothers me. But the call for all of us is to just sort of take a life inventory. Maybe this week you'll just sit down and begin to just write out and go, okay, God, here's the areas where I know I'm trusting you, and here's the areas where I need to grow. So God, would you just help me? Teach me your ways. Help me to turn back to you. But all of it would be that we would fall more in love with Jesus, learn more of who he is, and trust him above everything else that we think we can put trust in.